What is up, guys? Welcome back to Come At Me, Bro. This is episode 55. We are back after about a two-week hiatus. I am Joey, joined by the now healthy Drew and Tyler. Drew, how are you doing?
I am doing well. Thank you for doing a slightly different intro because I was not prepared with a one-liner.
And Tyler.
R.I.P. Mad Mike Hughes. You guys heard about this guy?
Wow. No, who is he?
He believed that the earth was flat.
Oh, this guy.
He was killed when his home made a rocket crash in the California desert.
Yeah, it was supposed to be a test flight to go up to 5,000 feet, and yeah, it exploded.
He wanted to take a picture. Well, it didn't explode. He wanted to take a picture of the Earth so that it's flat, so he made this homemade rocket, and it was his second attempt. And so when he goes up, he's supposed to go up to, I believe, 62 miles.
That was his eventual goal, yeah.
And he was only at 5,000 feet, which is less than a mile. And when he was on his way back down, his parachute did not deploy, and therefore his emergency parachute did not deploy. And it's just a picture. It's a video of him just skyrocketing back to Earth from 5,000 feet, and you can fill in the blanks.
Right, like it's legitimately sad that this guy died, but it's also like, this dude believed so hard that the Earth was flat that he was trying to build his own rocket to take pictures to prove that the world was flat.
I mean, coronavirus is out there, and coronavirus is it's spreading everywhere. It's like a huge epidemic. I think stupidity might be an epidemic as well, though, guys. And it's just continued to grow year after year. Like, this is crazy to me. Some guy built a rocket and ended up dying in this whole adventure.
It was like a millionaire.
It was sponsored by the Science Channel.
Even better.
Sort of.
The Science Channel was kind of egging him on, and he called him the backyard astronaut.
Yeah.
That's what they're naming the series. I really don't know what's worse, either that or Man City being out for, was it 2 years out of the Champions League?
Oh, man.
We haven't talked about that on here, have we?
No, we haven't. I was really hoping you could explain exactly what they did wrong. I don't care which
Please.
One of you does it.
Okay, it's not in the show notes today, guys. We can talk a little bit about it. So the issue is that back, I don't remember the exact years, but let's say like 4 or 5 years ago, Man City came out and supposedly told UEFA that they earned so much money or an amount of money, let's say, in revenue via sponsors. And the way the UEFA Champions League works, you have to earn a certain amount of money versus how much money you spend on players. So Man City said they brought in all this sponsorship money, they paid for this player. Overall, when they dove into this, supposedly, and there's some other back channel stuff going on here, but when they looked at the sponsorship money, supposedly some of it was actually the Man City owner putting it in through other companies, is what it's kind of come down to. And they're saying that's an illegal way to fund sponsorship money and thus shouldn't be used toward players, which would put Man City over the fair play money cap. And that's why they're being banned here, because they lied about it and they ended up breaking the rules. That's where you get the 2-year ban from. Now, on the UEFA side, the argument is that they came about this information illegally. They ended up getting this information from an agent that worked in a, let's just say, mysterious way or questionable way, where they should not have found out this information in the way they did. And because of that, now Man City is countersuing. For one, saying that they actually did make the sponsorship money and it does count in the way it was attributed. And then on the opposite side, they're saying, hey, the way you came about information anyway, even if it's wrong, it was the wrong way to go about it. So now they're countersuing. And now the biggest thing with this whole thing, so yes, you can argue Man City, oil giant, they spend way too much money and they end up getting to participate in these leagues. The other side is that a lot of big leagues are actually backing Man City here. So I don't remember the exact leagues, but like the Chinese government is a huge backer of Man City in the case. I want to say, and don't quote me on this, it's something like the NFL or the MLB is supporting Man City in this case as well, just to argue like the whole financial aspect of the way big pro sport competitions are ran, and they don't feel like UEFA's law should be put into place or this ruling should be put into place. So between all the funding and obviously Man City's pile of money, they've hired 23 lawyers to take on UEFA here. So it's going to be interesting. The two things that are going to come out of this, in my opinion, is either one, we're going to see the suspension upheld and UEFA is going to have a very powerful ruling from this. Two, it ends up being reduced to 1 year and UEFA ends up being cited for corruption because they're being investigated just like FIFA was a few years ago. Or three, the court rules in favor of Man City. This gets abolished from UEFA. UEFA starts to lose control of the rulings in the league because this will no longer be upheld. And then you have other sporting leagues start to end up changing the way their collaborative bargaining agreements work and the way that some of the funding works as well. So there's a whole lot to unpackage there. Personally, I think both parties should be punished. I think Man City is definitely in the wrong in the way they did it, even as a Man City fan. And on the opposite side, I think UEFA is corrupt as hell. I think there's a lot of underlying things going on there. Regardless of this case, I think there's been some questionable things in the past couple of years from them. So I think both parties are at fault, and I fully expect both to find some sort of punishment involved.
I mean, we know that these big soccer things are corrupt because there's so much money in it, but it's also hard for me to want to support the side that's backed by the Chinese government. I mean, that's the same people who literally tried their best to cover up coronavirus being a thing. So it's kind of hard to trust them, but I see your point. It definitely sounds like it's bad for both sides.
I mean, Tyler, Cheers. What's your thought? You're a soccer referee, obviously. You're going to have some opinions on soccer here and there. I know you follow a little bit of soccer internationally. What are your thoughts on the whole case overall?
Well, we know FIFA's corrupt from day one. I mean, ever since Bag Boy, whatever his name is, blah, blah, starts with a B. The former FIFA commissioner, Blankford, dumb head, whatever
Blofeld?
His name is.
No, no, James. It's that's James Bond. Bloomberg, nope, different conversation.
No, it was like Seton something, right? Seton Blatter or something.
Yeah, Blatter. Yeah.
Yeah, Mister needs to go to the bathroom. Blatter.
Sepp Blatter.
Sepp Blatter.
There you go.
He was corrupt from day one, so it's no surprise that some of these leagues are still corrupt and still have some nincompoops in there. You get caught, you get busted. I mean, I think this is one of the harsher punishments. I think more teams, I mean, Houston should have done something like this. I think soccer knows, you know, how to punish people. They put people away. And when they do that, I think it shows just how much that, you know, they're trying to set the standard of like, you shouldn't do this. So hopefully it sticks. Hopefully it shows the world that, or at least the league, that you don't want to do this.
Yeah, I think one of the other reasons it's as harsh as it is because of the fact that they've been trying to get Man City for a couple of years now. I think they originally suspected this a couple of years ago, and they tried to pin it on them, and they just weren't able to. So I think that's part of the reason we also see the increase here, and part of the reason I think even if they do win, it'll probably be reduced to 1 year. Moving on from that, we also have a ton of other big discussions in a multitude of leagues. We're going to hit a bit on those today, depending on how much time we have here. Let's kick things off with the NFL, though. So they are arguing about this new CBA. I say arguing, discussing, let's say. Between the players, the owners, all of the contracts, and the representative parties. So there's a bunch of different things being proposed here. One of the biggest ones being the seasonal structure. So currently the NFL runs a 16-game regular season with the postseason being there right after the regular season. Now with this in particular, we're looking at a few different changes here. So one, if things stay as they are now, the postseason will expand from 12 to 14 teams. And then starting in 2020, the NFL has the option to expand the regular season from 16 to 17 games as well. And if the NFL ends up moving to 17 games, each team will receive a bye week in place of a fourth preseason game as well. So they're still playing the same number of games in a sense if you count preseason. It just does shift one of those games to a bye week, which can be seen as a positive or negative. So I'll go to you first, Tyler. What are your thoughts on the league, one, expanding the playoffs from 12 teams to 14 teams, and then on the opposite side, expanding from 16 to 17 games?
Starting with the playoffs, man, the Bills have been so close to being that 13th spot or that 14th spot team. So, and now that the Bills are somewhat good and a playoff contender, I'm like, no, they should remain at 12, you know, because for the last 20 years, the Bills have been on the outside looking in. And I think 12 is a good number. I think if you add more cooks in the kitchen, it's just going to get more of a mess. I think having the 12 is good. I think I like it the way it is with the 12. Even with, you know, divisions going kaput and, you know, 9-7 teams getting home field advantages, so be it. You know, that's just how the cookie crumbles. Going from 16 to 17 games, I think you're better off losing a preseason game and somehow incorporating maybe an international game or some type of extra, I mean, extra game, I don't know how, where, I mean, maybe it's the AFC, maybe, you know, you play, you know, if you're from the Bills perspective, it's someone else from the AFC. I don't know how you pick that game. I don't like odd numbers. I think odd numbers are weird. I think even numbers are much, much better to look at. Even keel and none of these odd records. I'm not a fan of 17 games. It's just weird odd number. Maybe 18, but even then I think that's too much. But if we do have 17 games, we should have two byes. And so here's my – we don't start the NFL season until September. So two preseason games in September, and then from there you carry it all the way through February with two byes, and it gives us right into March Madness. So by the end of February – you have your Super Bowl, and you're right into March Madness.
Now, see, I don't think that happens, one, because of all the friendly relationship happening with the XFL now. I don't think they would go that far. The other thing is injuries increase when it's cold outside. So I don't know if I see the NFL moving that far back.
You get two byes.
Which they have. Half so they're going to have the one regular bye.
Half these games are indoor, McDermott. Half these games are in a dome.
Right, right, right. A number of them definitely are.
But there is already the second bye, right?
There is. The second bye is built in. It's just at the beginning of the season.
That's lame.
Okay, Drew, so what are your thoughts? Let's start expanding the playoffs. So we're moving, possibly adding two more teams. This introduces a bunch of different things. Some of the points that I would hit on before we go to you, Drew. One, this is going to make it so that the top seed of each division, or I'm sorry, each division, each conference, will end up with a bye in the playoffs. That, to me, is a big issue. Is when you're looking overall, what does the second team see? Like, what does that second team get? They really get nothing at this point. Like, you get the lower level opponent in a sense, but you're not getting that bye, which is very crucial. Like the Kansas City Chiefs, who are that second team this year, would they have won without that extra bye week of preparation? That's a question mark. I think one of the other things is, like, in a sense, at the end of the season, teams are going to be more willing to bench those players instead of really fighting for that second seed. Between second and third, there's not a huge advantage anymore. So you're going to get some people maybe benching more players. You're going to get some people playing a little bit more relaxed if they've already secured a playoff spot in general. So I think that could be another issue with it. Now, on the opposite side, I think it does help a bit in certain areas. Like if a division is very strong, and instead of only being able to get two teams in from a division, let's say the Patriots, the Bills, and the Dolphins, which these three together would probably never happen, but the three of them are just incredibly strong this year. Now all three of those teams could get in. All four teams could get in, really. Depending on these particular way these things shake out, because now you're looking at more wild card spots. So if a division is very like overpowered in general, expanding to more teams could allow that to happen. So those are a few pros and cons to throw into there, Drew. What are your thoughts overall on this possible expansion?
I don't know. That's going to be my honest start to this answer is I don't know. I've been thinking about it a lot. I'm never one to turn down the idea of more football games because I love the NFL. I love football. I love watching it. But then I think about this year, and if this past season had had these rules, we would have got to see the Pittsburgh Steelers led by Duck Hodges play against the Chiefs to open up the playoffs. And that sounds absolutely terrible. I think I would rather... you know, put screws through my thumbnails than have sat and watched that game.
Good. That was a good analogy.
Yeah, thank you. I thought so. So I like the idea. I see what they're getting at. The problem is I don't feel like it's always enough competition. And I know that any team can beat any team at any time. People can go on runs. Teams that struggle throughout the year can get it together at the end and make a run and win it all. I get that. I'm not trying to discount that. But boy, if they'd implemented that this year and that was the team that got in with this new rule, everyone would have turned against it like immediately, especially if the Steelers somehow beat the Chiefs and then lost the following week. You're suddenly robbed of getting to see the Chiefs in other games that you actually wanted to see them in. So I'm very skeptical of the idea. I like the concept of more games, but when I look at the league and see how there's a pretty clear divide between the top half and the bottom half, and the chance of that bottom half creeping into the playoffs, I don't like it. And all I have to do is point to the NBA, where you see pretty regularly at least two teams that are sub 500 get into the playoffs because the Eastern Conference is a dumpster. And it's not great. Those first couple rounds are so like underwatched and underattended, and the ratings are terrible for it. And no one pays attention until you get two or three rounds into the playoffs, because you know that there are these teams that probably won't compete and no one's interested in watching them. And we don't really need to see that happen into the NFL. There's no need to change the season around just for these games that are probably not going to get you much attention. And then, yeah, like you said, the number two seed suddenly becomes a whole lot less valuable. I mean, it's important deeper into the playoffs if you've got that two and you end up facing the three and you get to be the host. Like, that becomes very important. And I think teams would still fight for that. But, boy, that bye week is a stronger motivator, I think, than that potential home field advantage in a divisional round or a championship round. So I definitely think you have to look at that there. But all the NFL is seeing is money. And if there is a playoff game, I don't care how bad the matchup is, fans will go to the game. So the NFL will make money, and that's all they care about. So from a money-making perspective, it makes sense. As a fan and thinking about the game itself, I don't think I like it, which is weird to say, because like I said, I love football and I love more games.
Yeah, I mean, I would say I'm in a similar field, to be honest, Drew. I feel like I love the idea of more football games. Again, as Tyler said, like, as you expand, you need to throw in more buys. I don't know if another buy at the beginning of the season is going to quite do it, because they're pretty much in buy mode at that point anyway. Your starters are not really playing a ton. I don't really think that's a great place for a buy. I think you'd want to mix it in somewhere in the season for these teams, in particular with that 17 game more than the playoff expansion. But with the playoff expansion in general, I think it's going to be good some years and bad other years. Like, there's going to be years where three teams from a division should probably get in, but you're going to end up getting one of the wild cards from another division. And then it ends up that one team just kind of, in a sense, gets screwed because it's right outside the margin. But at the same point, if they played one game better throughout the year, they would have been in anyway. So maybe they're just not good enough at the time anyway. So there's a few different arguments I think you can take with it. Overall, if I had to vote right now, I think I'd vote for it to stay at 12.
Less is more. Less is better. If you oversaturate it, it just becomes not very good. You know, you can put a little salt in the French fries, but as soon as you put extra salt, it's just salt. And that loses its flavor. So I think you have to keep it at 12. I mean, if you know, it's like the same thing that with college football, they want to add more teams. It's like, can you imagine a freaking Oregon playing in Alabama the way Oregon played this year, or, you know, Utah State playing Clemson? I mean, it just looked bad.
Right, exactly. There are definitely, like college football specifically, there are definitely years where you could see six or eight teams being in the playoff and it being pretty good. And then there are more years like this year where there were barely three teams to be in the playoff, let alone four.
Right. And I think it's going to be the same thing with the NFL. Like, it's going to shift here and there depending on the year. But on the most side, or the majority side, I would say it's usually less teams probably should earn their spot in there as opposed to more. And like you said, Drew, like, yes, you're going to get more revenue from an extra couple playoff games, obviously. People are going to buy tickets for those teams. But when you look at the quality of game as well, I think you could potentially lose viewers because you're going to, yeah, keep those teams fans. But if it's Kansas City versus Pittsburgh and Kansas City's blowing out the Steelers team, I'm not going to stay tuned in. I could really care less. And I think unless you're a Kansas City or Pittsburgh fan, you might feel the same way. So you're going to end up losing viewership and you're going to lose sponsorship dollars on that because of that. Commercials are going to be harder to get for those games, or they're going to pay less for those games. So overall, you might make more in-person revenue, but on the stream side, the video side, the TV side, I think you actually might lose money depending on how those matchups look.
Yep.
Okay, so if we're voting right now, I'm voting 12. Drew?
Yeah, I'm going to vote 12 still.
Tyler?
10.
Okay, 12. 16 or 17 games. I'm going to vote to stick with 16. Drew?
I am okay, actually, with a 17th game. I've also thought about this a lot. I didn't mention it in any of my other rant there, but I'm actually okay with this idea. I think, I guess I'm torn. I'll start by saying I would vote for 17 games because there are a lot of guys in the NFL who are not stars that another game check, like their salary getting to increase by another game check, would be huge for them and enable them to keep chasing this dream that they have. And it also gives us more football to watch. The rosters are expanding, so it gives even more chance for some of these guys to play. And it just gives teams further opportunity to make that playoff push, especially if we keep it at 12 games. Like, that's another chance for a team to make it in with the right combination of stuff happen, or for another team to sweep in and take that number one seed. I don't have a problem with one more game, especially given the expanded rosters and the expanded then game checks to go with it.
I like it. I like it. Okay, a couple other things to hit on this whole CBA thing. Let's talk drugs.
Yeah.
Here, come at me, bro. We're all about the drugs.
Yeah.
Some of the policies being discussed. So a few bullet points here. Increased emphasis on clinical care rather than punishment. So no suspensions for players receiving clinical care is up for debate here. Significant reduction of penalties for marijuana use. No suspensions for positive tests. Annual testing limited to first 2 weeks of training camp. Higher thresholds for positive tests. I won't get into the whole grams and everything, but this is a big deal because a lot of players last year got suspended or fined because of marijuana. Three, increased discipline for DUIs. So this is going to be a 3-game suspension for each DUI violation. This is definitely increased from last year. We saw a lot of DUIs previously. Now they're getting suspended more games for it. Last but not least, players permitted at team facilities during the second half of suspension period. So now if you're suspended, the second half, you can now still report to the facility. It doesn't go into specifics of if you can participate in practice, what you're able to do at the facilities, but it does look like it's less harsh on that front half. So overall, you're now allowed to do drugs easier, at least marijuana. And I think a lot of that is due to it becoming more legal in a lot of states. Increased discipline for DUIs. So DUIs are being taken much more seriously with the 3-game suspension. And then the players now being permitted at team facilities during that second half of suspension period. So if you do get suspended, you're still able to meet with your team a little bit more with that second half of the suspension. Overall, Drew, what are your thoughts on the new drug policies being put in over here?
Say again, sorry.
What are your overall thoughts on here? So smoke up, Drew. What are we thinking? We got the marijuana changes, the DUI changes, team facility suspension being changed a bit. I think this is a topic that needed to be addressed, but are your thoughts positive on these changes? Do you want to change other things up, be a bit more harsh or a bit more lax in areas?
I haven't actually given it a whole lot of thought. I did see a lot of these changes, and my first thing is I love harsher punishments for DUIs. That needs to be a thing everywhere in society in any way possible. I don't care what your job is. I don't care what your career is. I don't care where you live. If you're dumb enough to get a DUI and you're selfish enough to put people's lives in danger like that, you deserve so much more than you're ever actually going to get as a punishment. That's not a stance I'll ever really soften on. And no particular reason. I've never had any direct impact in my life from DUI, knock on wood. But I've seen it, and I know enough to know that these people have more than enough money to call a frickin' cab. So I'm all for harsher punishments there. I also don't have a problem with them getting more relaxed on the marijuana. I know that's changing in the country in general. There are a lot of positive things that people have learned about it. I'm not saying that it's a wonder drug. I'm not saying that everyone should do it. And I'm not saying that it should be, you know, as legalized as like tobacco is, although it's probably not as bad for you as tobacco. There definitely needs to be more research and such done on it, but there's no doubting the anecdotal evidence of it helping people, especially when it comes to like pain and those kind of things. And I don't blame these guys who are beating their bodies up for doing that occasionally. And so even if this isn't the best course of action, the fact that they're addressing it and kind of decriminalizing it, as it were, is pretty cool. And I'm okay with that. I also like this idea of second half of suspension, players being allowed to be around the facility, because even if they're not allowed to like full on practice, being back around the team and getting more of those resources that are available on site, I think is huge, because such a big part of any sort of recovery, turnaround, change that you want to make as a person involves being where it is that you want to be and being able to visualize and be a part of that and feel integrated and feel supported. And that's just not possible when you're not allowed around the team in any way. So I think this is a huge step towards helping guys recover, get back to the people they want to be, whatever the situation is, whatever the right words there are. I don't know why this wasn't a thing before. Like, I get why it wasn't, because they're trying to, it's trying to be punishment, but I'm glad they're realizing that there's a difference between punishing a guy, though, and adding to the problem. And I think keeping them just completely away was adding to the problem. So I really like this. So overall, I'm okay with these. I'm sure if I sat and studied and thought and looked some more, I could find some changes to make, but it's all at least going in the right direction. So,
okay, Puff the Magic Dragon. Puff the Magic Dragon.
Tyler, no, sir,
I think you're a professional. And as a professional, you have people who look up to you. And if you loosen the rules that are going to occur with any type of drug, it's only going to become more and more of a, I think, a problem. I mean, I think people can use drugs responsibly, whether it be alcohol or you know, marijuana. But I think it's important to know that I don't think it's a good idea to start loosening the restrictions for maybe off season. But I mean, during season, you're a professional, you're in the spotlight, you don't need those types of drugs to help you. And if you want to, if you need it, you know, to survive, then maybe you shouldn't be playing NFL. You know, I mean, it, well, I think we're going to see a lot more people retire earlier with the whole, like Luke Kuechly, and other players who, you know, like life. And so and, you know, have other priorities than just football. But if you start puffing the Magic Dragon and letting it, you know, do what you want, I think that's going to trickle down to our younger athletes. And they're going to see it like, why not? Well, you know, my role model's doing it. I don't see why not. I can't do it. And I don't think that poses well for younger athletes and other people who look up to these athletes, especially the NFL.
Yeah, I'm kind of between you both on this. Like, I get it. I don't understand all of the grams thing. I don't smoke marijuana personally, so I don't understand how significant the gram measurements are in particular, but I understand why it could become legal in this sense, because when you're overlooking it, different states are allowing it and it's becoming legal, so the NFL making it illegal starts to become a bit more questionable as it's no longer against the law, and that's one of the reasons it was put into place in general. Marijuana is not necessarily a PED. It's not going to be a performance-enhancing drug, so it's not going to be an unfair advantage on the field, more or less. But at the same point, if it's used irresponsibly, I think it can, in a sense, lead to something like a DUI. Again, it's obviously different, but at the same point, it does start to take over your senses in that way if you use it immaturely. So I think on that sense, it could be a bad thing. So I kind of fall right between you both on this one. As far as the DUIs, I completely agree with Drew. I love the increased suspension. I even think 3 games is still light, if I'm being honest. Just DUIs, people go to jail for DUIs, people take lives with DUIs. I think it could be much, much more serious. And 3 games to me does not seem that harsh. In fact, I would probably double it. Because players should not be doing DUIs. It's so stupid. So I'm not a big fan of that one, but I do like the fact we see it increasing. I'd be totally fine if they increase it even more. And I do agree. I like the idea of them coming to the facility during the second half of their suspension. I'm just more curious what they're allowed to do. Are they allowed to practice at that point? Are they just allowed to meet with players and coaches? What exactly are they permitted to do at those facilities? So overall, I think I like these changes. Yeah, I think I like them overall. I think I would vote for all of these for the most part.
I think with the grams is they're trying to prevent players from distributing.
Yes, that's exactly
I mean, there's no reason for you to have 2 kilos of marijuana if it suddenly becomes legal. Like, you know, if it's suddenly like, because you have money. And so it becomes another source of income if you now hold a bunch of weed. So in my opinion, I think, you know, I think the distribution comes with, or the grams come with distribution, and it's like, you shouldn't have that much, dude. Like, whether you're smoking it or not, because then it just becomes illegal activity. And yeah, you're dealing with higher, you're dealing with the mob and stuff.
Dealing with the mob and stuff. Absolutely. Last thing I want to touch on the NFL before we move forward is holdouts. Just quickly, they have increased fines for holdouts and players who leave training camp without permission. Hello, Antonio Brown. And then players under contract who fail to report to camp on time or leave the team for more than 5 days without permission will no longer be eligible to earn an accrued season for that year. This is huge, boys. Wow. And I'm kind of surprised that the players are leaning toward approving this at this point. Again, I don't think this is final yet, but this is big. This is stuff like that Ezekiel Elliott holdout would have never happened. Some of these Antonio Brown issues would have never happened. Or if they did happen, they would not get paid or play for that season. So this is, I think, of this whole document, this is the most harsh change being made.
That's very interesting. I had not seen that.
You should.
Can you repeat it again?
Yeah, please.
Yeah, apparently Drew was holding out on reading the document. Hey-o. We are looking at increased fines for holdouts and players who leave training camp without permission. And the second bullet point is players under contract who fail to report to camp on time or leave the team for more than 5 days without permission will no longer be eligible to earn an accrued season for that year.
Thank you, Elliot.
Yeah, I mean, that's
huge. Thank you, Antonio Brown. Thank you.
That is absolutely ginormous.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I like it or not. Like, from a player perspective, like, Ezekiel Elliott's one thing, but like Le'Veon Bell, for example, I don't think he was necessarily in the wrong the way he did the holdout. I think he deserved a salary. I think he got screwed with his trade, but he ended up signing it. But overall, I think certain players do have a right to hold out because of the injuries, especially at the running back position. They are so much more prone to injuries than a lot of these other positions are. And with that in mind, their bodies are only going to hold up for so long. They want to secure their funds. I think some of them get to the point of selfishness, and especially with all the money we're dealing with here. But at the same point, this is such a huge limit. 5 days without permission, anything over that, and you're ineligible, and you don't get your accrued season for that year. I mean, that is absolutely ginormous. And on top of that, you're being fined for the holdouts as well.
I mean, it's huge for sure. I'm not going to disagree with you there. But
good. I mean, it's just the league putting more of a restriction. The owners are like, why the hell are we paying these players to sit in their butt and think they're going to want more money when we already give them enough money? I mean, it's strictly coming from the owners who are like, I don't want this on my watch. So beef up the fines, get our players straight. I mean, it's doing everything it can to not become a players' league like the NBA. What has happened over the last 3-4 years with Ezekiel Elliott, with the Washington Redskins O-lineman, which is a totally different story of just poor management, with Antonio Brown, with Le'Veon Bell, with San Diego Chargers running back, I forget his name, but that guy too. I mean, they think the NFL is stating, like, this is not a players' league. If you want to go to a players' league, go to the NBA. Because we're not having this.
Yeah, and
they're setting the tone.
And I feel like, and I know part of how it's addressed in the CBA here, but the problem is they want to make it to where these guys, the players, have to honor their contract. And I'm not saying that's wrong, but the NFL, the owners, still have the ability to just do whatever they want with the contract. And that's not how contracts are supposed to work. So I know they're trying to keep it from being a player-controlled league like the NBA where, you know, stars control everything, and that's good. That's not how the NFL needs to be. The NFL can't work like that. But if the owners are going to expect players to toe the line, then it's really something should change where the owners are held more to the standard of honoring the contracts that they offer their players. You know, if you offer them 5 years and, you know, $100 million, then that player should be pretty well certain that they're going to get to play for 5 years for you and get $100 million. And that's not to say there can't be buyouts or trades or release if a player wants to be released or anything like that. But this idea of the owners just being able to, on a whim, basically say, no, we're done with you. And you're out of half the money that we said you could earn in your contract. I don't know. I have a problem with that. I have a problem with an employer having that much control to go back on their word. And maybe that's what it is. It's they are going back on their word. It's not even the player not meeting or doing what they're supposed to do. It's the owner just going back on their word because they didn't plan correctly.
Anything you want to add, Ty?
They don't want to be a players league.
No, and I don't want that either, which is why I'm not like super against this idea. But I am surprised the players are considering it.
And I mean, with the NFL, I think it also, I mean, it just hurts your team in general. Like, if an NBA player were to hold out, okay, you have one star player who holds out, you know, okay, you can find someone else. But, like, I mean, a running back, an offensive lineman can't do that. A safety can't do that. But a running back or quarterback who says, I want to get paid more, pay me now, it, I think, has more weight. And I mean, it's a quarterback league. And so if quarterbacks start doing this, if you know, everyone starts doing this, it hurts the league, because now your star players are out, and no one wants to see a star player out. So,
absolutely. But one thing that is out is one of our topics for today's show, and that is the MLB new playoff proposal. We were going to hit on it, but I know you boys want to cover a big fight that happened. Tyler or Drew, who wants to break it down? Fury versus Wilder.
Only time I got interested in this fight was I was actually watching an ABC special on it, and I was very intrigued because I had never heard the fight before, but it's a heavyweight fight. And Fury, who comes from, what, Ireland, I think?
Maybe, yeah.
Sure. And I'm guessing Wilder is the American, that's I'm guessing. But Fury got knocked out twice after, got knocked down twice, like hit the floor, looked like he was lights out twice during the Fury and Wilder fight. And to give our listeners who maybe not watch fighting like McDermott a little heads up. So they've already fought once before, and that ended up in a draw because Fury destroyed Wilder from a punches, from an attack standpoint, but Wilder had two good licks, and so therefore it became a draw after 12 straight rounds. Or how many other rounds you play.
It was an incredible fight, then, that first one.
Yeah, which one is one of the craziest, incredible fights. So then they wanted a rematch to figure it out. And Fury won in 7 rounds because Wilder threw in the towel because he was just getting his bell rung left and right.
Well, one trainer so threw his in the team towel.
Yes. And so so Fury won. That is that. Now, I didn't know you could do this, but you can protest after a fight. And I'd like Drew to pick it up from here of how to protest and who is the one that is protesting, which I'm guessing you can guess. But
He's not protesting.
I thought it was a protest.
I didn't see anything about a protest. No, he was just giving an excuse for why he lost. The contract, he has the right to challenge for a rematch.
Challenge.
That's what it is. Yeah. So he can, the loser, actually either of them could, if whoever the lost was allowed, like within a certain period of time to issue a rematch. And if you watch the fight, Fury was just all over him the entire time. Wilder could not do anything. And so a lot of people wondered, you know, is he even going to consider a rematch? He was so outclassed. What could he possibly do? What could possibly be different? Well, when asked about the fight, he gave a great reason for why it could be different. He said that the costume he chose to wear to walk into the ring was the cause for him not fighting well, because it was a 40-pound costume that he wore to walk all the way from the tunnel up to the ring. And supposedly that just drained all of the strength and endurance out of his legs, and so he couldn't move or do well in the fight because he was already so tired from carrying 40 pounds of costume to the ring. Whoever on his team thought that was a good idea to begin with, I hope got fired, because that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. And there's no way that was the problem. If you watched the fight, I don't care if he was a little tired, he just got his butt kicked, and being able to move a little more wasn't going to change that at all.
The fight was on pay-per-view, Do you want to guess how much it was to watch it?
40 pounds.
80?
40 pounds. What the? No. Higher.
150.
It was $80. Jeez. $80 to watch this fight. It ended in 7 rounds. And I mean, do you guys remember watching the Pacquiao Mayweather fight?
I did not, because it was exactly what I expected it to be.
And so, I mean, I remember watching it. We got all our friends and pitched in like $5, $10, whatever it was. And so this fight was supposed to start at 9 o'clock. It didn't start till way after midnight because of the introductions and because it was a 40-minute introduction for each fighter walking in.
Mm-hmm.
And so he carried that for 40 minutes, just as long as this episode. And so you can imagine, for the last 40 minutes you've been listening to this episode, someone's just carrying 40 pounds of weight. That's a good amount. But why would you have that on your costume? I have no idea.
Wow. Okay, I mean, yeah. First of all, 40 pounds for a costume, that seems obnoxious, if you ask me in general. But also, you should these look guys it up. Lift a ton. Is 40 pounds really going to be that much to them?
40 pounds is 40 pounds.
Yeah, especially for that long period of time. Like, it's going to be draining.
Okay, I didn't see the guy's costume, as we have it here in air quotes. Isn't it spread out like across his body? Like, we're not talking about 40 pounds on one part of his body either, are we?
No, it's mainly on his shoulders, if you want to think about it. Like, and you can look up some pictures of it. But, you know, it's kind of all over him, but a lot of that weight is pulling down on his shoulders. So it's just pushing him down. And so his legs are still holding up an extra 40 pounds because he's standing. You know, he's not sitting or whatever with this weight on him. It's all on top of his body. So it's still 40 extra pounds pushing him down.
Now,
so maybe it didn't have an impact on his arms, but you know, since his legs are carrying everything, it is all going to be concentrated there.
See, that makes me feel like the good old, what is it, like the leg, the ankle weights? Like, shouldn't they power you up? Like, once you take it off, like, I can lift so much more now.
It's like Piccolo in Dragon Ball Z, yeah.
I don't know.
His garments are weighted.
40-pound wardrobe, that seems obnoxious to me. Both wearing a 40-pound wardrobe and complaining about a 40-pound wardrobe for this reason.
Right, but made that choice.
Right, and it sounds like an excuse to me more than anything. So, overall, I did not watch the fight. I really don't follow boxing all that well, if I'm being honest. So, there is going to be a rematch, and when is that happening?
Come July, they are having a rematch. Do yourself a favor and go look up some highlights from the fight. There are some really great punches from Fury, because he just attacked from the moment the bell rang.
Would you say he was punching furiously?
He was full of fury. Yeah, that's... The name is perfect. Also...
Okay, shut up.
While you're looking, do yourself a favor and just Google Tyson Fury 5 years ago to Tyson Fury today and prepare to feel very bad about yourself. Because
Tyson Fury, he's always been F-U-R-Y?
A big guy. Yeah, he's always been a big guy, and he's still not like cut. Like, he's huge, but he's still got a bit of a belly and stuff. But he went from just big-bellied man to a monster. It's pretty incredible.
Oh, I think this is it. Oh, wow, yeah.
Is it go from pot belly to like 1920s boxer?
Yeah, he probably changed a few weight classes too.
Yeah, he was always a heavyweight. He just went from heavyweight in the front to heavyweight everywhere. But yeah, he looks like a 1920s boxer. Like, he's got the really high-waisted shorts, and he's got a bit of a belly just to give him mass. But he's huge. He's like 6'5".
Yeah, he's a big boy.
He's a monster, and I'm really excited. I will probably actually pay for pay-per-view for this third fight between them, because they have delivered twice so far.
Good times. I will not be paying for the fight, but I would love to watch highlights or hear it from you two.
A live stream.
Or our listeners out there. Listeners, if you're going to be paying for the fight, you can let me know how it goes on Twitter at CAMB Podcast. You can also shoot me or the rest of the guys an email here if you want to chat about it. And that's CAMBpodcast@otnmedia.org. Last but not least, go ahead and give us some support. If you want to support us financially, you can do so. And that's patreon.com/OTN. Thanks again for listening, guys. We enjoy having you, and we're glad to be back after a little hiatus there. Everyone's feeling nice and healthy. We're back in our normal homes, and we are back to recording. We'll see you again next week, guys. Have a good one.
Watch out for the corona.
This podcast is part of the Overtime Network. Get more at overtimenetwork.com.